You will have an amazing Tuesday.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Brazilian authorities say they're looking into who may have been behind the shocking uprising that sent protesters storming into the nation's halls of power in a riot that had striking similarities to the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. In an unprecedented display for Latin America's largest nation, thousands of supporters of ex-president Jair Bolsonaro swarmed into Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidential palace on Sunday. As Brazil reels from riots, its former president has found a home in Florida, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Jair Bolsonaro's temporary home is in a gated community in Kissimmee, Florida, near Orlando. Supporters have traveled there hoping to see him. Bolsonaro has signed autographs, hugged children, and took selfies. Some in the crowd were wearing shirts saying, "Make Brazil great again." A handful of supporters dissipated as word spread Bolsonaro was hospitalized with abdominal pain. Bolsonaro has been called the Trump of the tropics, so it may come as no surprise he wound up just a few hours away from the former American president's Palm Beach compound. Ed Donahue, Washington.
President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday said the resilience of Ukraine's forces fighting off waves of attacks in the eastern region of Donbas has helped the country win time and gain strength. He said, "Thanks to the resilience of our soldiers in Soledar, we have won for Ukraine additional time and additional strength for Ukraine," Zelensky said in his nightly video address. Ukrainian military reports say the country's troops are withstanding heavy attacks by Russian forces redeployed in Soledar. This is VOA News. A problem developed during Virgin Orbit's attempt to launch the first satellites into orbit from Western Europe, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Sir Richard Branson's Virgin Orbit company is calling it an anomaly that prevented it from reaching orbit and says it's evaluating the problem. The U.S.-based company was using a modified jumbo jet named Cosmic Girl, which took off from Cornwall in England to release a rocket at 35,000 feet over the Atlantic to the south of Ireland. But about 2 hours after takeoff, the company reported a problem. The rocket was supposed to take 9 small satellites into orbit, some for civil use and some for defense. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The moment could be close for Sweden and NATO, AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says it's time for Sweden to join the military alliance because it's done what's necessary to secure Turkey's approval for membership. In an interview with a Swedish newspaper, Stoltenberg says the ratification process can come to an end now. Turkey has held up the process, wanting Nordic countries to crack down on groups thought to be terrorist organizations. In May, Sweden and neighboring Finland had applied to join NATO following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. federal prosecutors said on Monday a man accused of using a truck to kill 8 people on a New York City bike path in 2017 is an Islamic State sympathizer who attempted to satisfy the military group. Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reports.
Prosecutors said Saifulo Saipov began researching the Islamic State in 2014 and was in possession of serrated knives when he used a rental truck to mow down victims in the Halloween attack, leaving behind mangled bicycles, wounded and dead victims, and a school bus with a, quote, truck-sized hole. And that afterward, Saipov declared he did it for ISIS. Those killed include 5 Argentinian tourists and 1 Belgian tourist. More than a dozen other people were severely injured. Saipov has pleaded not guilty to all 28 charges.
Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom. Doctors who treated Damar Hamlin say the injured American football player was moved to a hospital in Buffalo to continue his recovery. It's an uplifting sign of the remarkable progress Hamlin has made a week after going into cardiac arrest and having to be resuscitated on the field during a game in Cincinnati. Hamlin was discharged from the University of Cincinnati Medical Center in the morning and flown to Buffalo, where Dr. William Knight said he was, quote, doing well. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, January 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. accuses Iran of contributing to war crimes in Ukraine as Kyiv waits for promised armored vehicles.
Bradleys are a type of armor vehicle. They're not tanks, but they have these tow missiles that are associated with them, which make them tank killers. That is one of the things that the Pentagon has really put its teeth around.
Former Brazilian president is in U.S. hospital as troops hunt for his supporters for attacking Congress and the Supreme Court.
President Lula da Silva promised to bring those responsible to justice. Demonstrators shattered windows, demolished computers, and graffitied walls before police in riot gear retook the palace.
And Pope Francis breaks silence on nationwide protests in Iran and denounces death penalty on protesters. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The Biden administration says Iran's sale of lethal drones to Russia for use in its ongoing invasion of Ukraine means the country may be, quote, contributing to widespread war crimes, unquote. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan leveled a charge against Iran on Monday as he spoke to reporters accompanying President Joe Biden on a trip to Mexico. While it did not signal a policy shift, it marked some of the sharpest U.S. rhetoric against Iran since it began providing weapons to Russia to support its nearly year-long war in Ukraine. Ukraine's president is praising the United States for its latest multi-billion dollar military package. The White House announced a new $3.7 billion military assistance package to help Ukraine and its neighbors on NATO's eastern flank as Russia's invasion of Ukraine grinds on. The assistance includes a $2.85 billion drawdown from the Pentagon stock that will be sent directly to Ukraine. Among the military equipment which analysts are describing as, quote, game changers, unquote, are Bradley armored vehicles, which President Volodymyr Zelensky said was, quote, exactly what is needed, unquote. For the significance of the Bradley vehicles, I reached VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb.
Bradleys are a type of armor vehicle. They're not tanks, but they have these tow missiles that are associated with them, which make them tank killers. That is one of the things that the Pentagon has really put its teeth around, is how important these Bradleys will be in the fight to counter any tanks that come from Russia. These Bradleys are going to give the Ukrainians increased firepower, protection for their infantry. Really, when you combine these Bradleys that are coming from the United States and what armored vehicles are coming from Germany and France as well, I know you also saw similar announcements from Germany and France over the last few days about their decision to send these armored vehicles to Ukraine. You can actually see a new armored division potentially forming that could really be, you know, kind of an iron fist for the Ukrainians in their next round of offensive operations to get Russian forces pushed out of Ukraine once they're, of course, properly manned and trained and the conditions are set. I mean, you have to keep that in mind. Everybody thinks that once the announcement comes out, the Bradleys are going to arrive in Ukraine, you know, the next few days. That is not the case. The Bradleys, they need training. So Ukrainians are going to have to go to some location and train to use these properly. They're also going to need maintenance. The United States has learned from its pullout in Afghanistan that if you do not maintain things, allies cannot properly keep them in the fight. You saw with the Afghan Air Force, once they lost the contractors that the United States used to maintain their air equipment, they didn't have an Air Force essentially anymore.
With the Pentagon agreeing on deploying the Bradleys outside the NATO military alliance and, of course, the United States, are they signaling that this war is about to shift to a new phase?
I'm going to get a little technical, a little Pentagon speak here, but these Bradleys, while they're very important and they can cause a lot of damage and allow a lot of infantry strength for the Ukrainians, they are not American-made A1 Abrams tanks. That is what President Zelensky has been asking for months now. And I actually spoke with the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Ukraine and Russia, Laura Cooper, just a few weeks ago, and I asked her why the United States has not supplied Ukraine with these American-made Abrams tanks. And she told me that the U.S. U.S. had prioritized armored personnel carriers like Humvees that Ukraine could use right now without having to do the training that they're going to have to do with the Bradleys, along with refurbished Soviet-type tanks that Ukrainians were already familiar with that could be deployed immediately, that again wouldn't take that extra level and layer of maintenance and training. Her quote to me was that this could not happen in the immediate future, but she didn't take them off the table. And again, when we were asking the Pentagon Press Secretary, Brigadier General Pat Ryder, we asked him about these M1A1 Abrams, and he said that the option's not off the table.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. U.S. President Joe Biden visited American border town of El Paso in Texas Sunday afternoon before traveling to Mexico City to meet with North American leaders. This is Biden's first trip to the southwestern border since taking office. VOA's immigration reporter Alain Barros has more.
President Joe Biden visited the U.S.-Mexico border Sunday for a first-hand look at border security. In his first trip to the border as president, Biden inspected a busy port of entry and walked with Border Patrol officers along the border wall that separates the United States from Mexico. Though the president visited a local migrant center, this was the closest he was to a location where about 400 migrants have been taking refuge on the sidewalks outside a church in El Paso, Texas. This is Jeremy Mejia, a migrant from Venezuela.
I have two children. I want to provide a better quality of life for them. I don't want them to go through what I went through. Here we've been robbed and mistreated. There are no human rights for us here.
Biden's visit to the U.S.-Mexico border comes on the heels of his administration's announcement of a new process for legal entry for migrants from Nicaragua, Cuba, Venezuela, and Haiti. The government also expanded border enforcement to allow immediate removal to Mexico for migrants from those four countries who entered the United States without authorization. This is Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
Effective immediately, citizens from Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, and Haiti who attempt to cross our border without authorization will be swiftly expelled to Mexico, which will accept returns of 30,000 individuals per month who fail to use these new pathways or their home country. At the same time, we will welcome up to 30,000 individuals per month from these four countries to come safely to live and work here for 2 years.
Under the new legal program, migrants from those four countries must apply online, find a financial sponsor, and pass security checks for a chance to live temporarily in the U.S. Those already at the border are in limbo and fear being detained by Border Patrol officers. Again, Venezuelan migrant Jeremy Mejia.
We can't cross the street because immigration officers can detain us.
Republicans continue to criticize Biden's approach to border security. Texas Governor Greg Abbott gave the president a letter outlining his recommendations for border security. This is Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
Also, this is for nothing but for show unless he begins to enforce the immigration laws already that exist in the United States of America that are contained in the letter that are provided to the president today.
Others believe the new policies are too harsh and go against current asylum laws. This is Fernando Garcia from Border Network for Human Rights.
I don't think the president will have time to understand what is happening here at the border. We wish he had more time, and before the announcement of any plan, we wished he could have met with people here at the border. And unfortunately, he didn't do it.
As Biden moves on to his next stop, government officials say the new border measures are not an asylum ban because there is still a way for asylum seekers to seek relief at ports of entry. Aleni Barros, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Aleni. Now that the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has finally been sworn in, Republican legislators can begin working on their agenda. Veronica Barderas Iglesias takes a look at what they seek to accomplish and their planned, quote, checks and balances, unquote, on the Biden administration.
It took 4 days of bitter disagreements, but the people's gavel is now in the hands of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. His promise to his fellow Republicans and the American people to keep the Biden administration in check.
We will hold the swamp accountable. From the withdrawal of Afghanistan to the origins of COVID and to the weaponization of the FBI.
McCarthy's new position in power came with a set of concessions to his detractors that will now shape his leadership. A single member of the lower chamber in Congress could call for an internal election to oust him. During an interview with ABC this week, Republican Representative Andy Barr downplayed the measure's potential impact.
We're just going back to the pre-Pelosi rule that was in place since 1910. I don't think that's an issue at all in terms of creating chaos.
Even if unity prevails, the new House Speaker will have to find ways to negotiate with the Biden administration on thorny matters such as immigration and spending cuts, which U.S. Representative Scott Perry told ABC are necessary.
It's about making sure that we have a budget that we can agree upon that doesn't just continually increase spending, but then we appropriate to that budget.
President Joe Biden released a statement congratulating McCarthy and saying he is, quote, prepared to work with Republicans when he can. House Republicans on their side are keen to investigate the president's administration and his family's business dealings. Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told NBC's Meet the Press he's hopeful he'll be able to find common ground with the new speaker for the sake of the American people.
I look forward to building upon the Biden agenda, tremendous accomplishments. And if Kevin McCarthy is willing to try to find common ground in that regard, they will find willing partners amongst House Democrats.
On the streets of Washington, Americans shared with VOA their opinions on the new congressional landscape.
As a Democrat, I'm not, as excited about the new leadership, but I am hopeful that they can find a way to work through some of the problems that is facing our country. And in particular, I really hope that they don't use any brinksmanship, particularly around the debt ceiling.
I don't see an awful lot of change in foreign policy, although I think that the Republicans are going to use the power of the purse to try to, rein in the illegal immigration that's occurring right now.
These are sensitive topics that could translate into tough negotiations, since Republicans now hold a slim 222 to 212 margin over Democrats in the new session of the 118th Congress, with one current vacancy. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro was admitted to a hospital in Orlando, Florida, with, quote, abdominal pain, unquote, newspaper O Globo reported on Monday. This as Brazilian soldiers, backed by police, dismantled a camp of his supporters in the capital, a day after rioters launched the worst attack on the state institutions since the country's return to democracy in the 1980s. Zachary Goldman of Reuters reports.
President Lula da Silva promised to bring those responsible to justice. Demonstrators shattered windows, demolished computers, and graffitied walls before police in riot gear retook the palace. On Monday, soldiers outside raised the flag, while inside, Lula held a cabinet meeting with his defense minister and commanders of the armed forces. Justice Minister Flavio Dino said 200 demonstrators had been arrested, although that number is expected to rise. U.S. President Joe Biden joined other world leaders in condemning Sunday's riots, calling them, quote, outrageous. Sunday's attacks recalled for many the assault on the U.S. Capitol 2 years ago by backers of former President Donald Trump. Dan Restrepo is with the Center for American Progress.
Unfortunately, it's a story that's quite familiar, certainly to Americans. You have a quasi-authoritarian right-wing former president who doesn't accept an election result, in this case, Jair Bolsonaro, who actually fled Brazil a couple of days before the inauguration on January 1st of President Lula da Silva. And today, his supporters tried a coup. They physically took over the Congress, the Supreme Court, and the Brazilian equivalent of the White House.
Lula blamed Bolsonaro for inflaming his supporters after a campaign of baseless allegations about election fraud after the end of his rule, marked by divisive nationalist populism. Bolsonaro denied inciting his supporters and said the rioters had, quote, crossed the line. He left Brazil shortly after he lost the election and has been living in Florida. A Brazilian newspaper on Monday reported the former president was hospitalized in the U.S. with abdominal pain. A source close to his family said Bolsonaro's condition was, quote, not worrying. At least one Democratic lawmaker is calling for the U.S. to expel the right-wing former president. Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas on Sunday told CNN, quote, "The United States should not be a refuge for this authoritarian who has inspired domestic terrorism in Brazil. He should be sent back to Brazil." The White House on Monday said it had received no requests from the Brazilian government regarding Bolsonaro's status in the U.S.
That's Zachary Goldman of Reuters. In other news, Pope Francis has broken his silence on a nationwide protest convulsing Iran. He has announced the recourse to the death penalty there and elsewhere and denounced it, and he seemingly legitimized the protests as demonstrations, quote, demanding greater respect for the dignity of women, unquote. Francis made the comments Monday in an annual speech to ambassadors accredited to the Vatican, a foreign policy discussed outlining the areas of greatest concern for the Holy See. In his remarks, Francis linked the Vatican's opposition to abortion to its opposition to the death penalty, saying both are a violation of the fundamental right to life. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. The moment could be closed for Sweden to become a member of the NATO Western Military Alliance, Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Disma reports.
The moment could be close for Sweden and NATO. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says it's time for Sweden to join the military alliance because it's done what's necessary to secure Turkey's approval for membership. In an interview with a Swedish newspaper, Stoltenberg says the ratification process can come to an end now. Turkey has held up the process, wanting Nordic countries to crack down on groups thought to be terrorist organizations. In May, Sweden and neighboring Finland had applied to join NATO following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Dozens of countries and international institutions have pledged more than $9 billion to help Pakistan recover and rebuild from this summer's devastating floods. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the conference with an impassioned plea for aid on behalf of millions of Pakistanis whose lives and livelihoods have been upended by this calamitous event. He described this crisis as a climate disaster of monumental scale. He noted one-third of Pakistan remained submerged underwater more than 6 months after epic floods struck this beleaguered country.
A terrifying wall of water killed more than 1,700 people, injured thousands more, and affected a total of more than 33 million, displacing 8 million people. It swept over roads, ruined millions of acres of agricultural land, and damaged or destroyed 2 million homes.
He said 9 million more people have been pushed to the brink of poverty, noting that they and millions of others are not just numbers on a page. He said they are individual women, children, and men who need and deserve international support. Guterres added, Pakistan, which represented less than 1% of global emissions, did not cause the climate crisis. And yet, he said, Pakistan was one of its biggest victims, and countries on the front lines of climate catastrophe needed massive support. Pakistan's Prime Minister, Shehbaz Sharif, agreed. He said a post-disaster needs assessment carried out in October estimated total damages and economic losses topped $30 billion. He said rehabilitation and resilient reconstruction needs were assessed at over $16 billion. Half that amount, he said, would come from Pakistan's domestic and development budget and the other half from international support.
I am asking for a sustained international support plan to meet this daunting challenge. I am asking for a new lifeline for people who need to power our economy and re-enter the 21st century with a future that is protected for such extreme risks to human security.
In response to this call, some countries have pledged significant sums of money. The United States, for example, has said it would provide $100 million of recovery funding. This brings the U.S. government's total contribution to Pakistan since the middle of August to more than $200 million. Speaking from Paris, French President Emmanuel Macron told the conference his country would mobilize more than $300 million for resilient reconstruction and climate adaptation. Prime Minister Shehbaz noted that the Jeddah-based Islamic Development Bank had announced a figure of $4.2 billion, the largest contribution so far. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recently discovered comet that is purported to have last visited our astronomical neighborhood some 50,000 years ago may soon be visible with the naked eye or with a pair of binoculars. According to NASA, the comet called C-2022-E3-ZTF was discovered within the orbit of Jupiter in early March 2022. The astronomers who spotted the comet used a wide-field survey camera at the Zwicky Transient Facility at the Palomar Observatory near San Diego, California. The space agency says the comet is now traveling through the inner solar system and should come within 166 million kilometers of the Sun when it reaches its closest point, or perihelion, on January 12th. C-2022-E3-ZTF will be about 42 million kilometers away when it makes its closest approach to Earth, or perigee, on February 12th. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Afua in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 5 years since Burma's military launched its genocidal campaign against Rohingya. The number of Rohingya refugees who fled into neighboring Bangladesh tells the story. Since 2017, 750,000 people have sought haven from the violence, bringing the number of Rohingya refugees currently living in camps in Bangladesh to approximately 1 million. The United States recognizes the generosity of the Bangladesh government and people for hosting these refugees with support from international donors and humanitarian actors. The United States remains the leading donor of humanitarian assistance to those whose lives have been upended by the violence in Burma's Rakhine State. The U.S. provided more than $1.9 billion over the past 5 years to affected populations in Burma, Bangladesh, and elsewhere in the region for Rohingya and their host communities. The United States also remains committed to pursuing justice for victims and accountability for the Burma military's heinous crimes against Rohingya and to advancing long-term solutions for Rohingya refugees, including their voluntary, safe, dignified, and sustainable return to Burma when conditions allow. At present, conditions in Burma are not safe for refugees to return home. Yet the situation for displaced Rohingya remains dire. Despite Bangladesh's generosity, safety and overcrowding in the camps are issues, as is lack of employment, freedom of movement, and access to basic services. As part of the United States' unwavering partnership with the government of Bangladesh and support for displaced Rohingya, last month, Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced the establishment of a resettlement program for vulnerable Rohingya refugees in collaboration with the government of Bangladesh and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. This program, which will be part of the global U.S. refugee admissions program, is one element of a broader, comprehensive response to the Rohingya refugee crisis, with the main focus on preparing the Rohingya for voluntary, safe, dignified, and sustainable return. The United States will consider for resettlement referrals submitted by the UNHCR. Secretary Blinken Americans said in a statement. The resettlement of most vulnerable Rohingya from Bangladesh reflects the United States' long-standing leadership on refugee settlement in the face of an unprecedented displacement crisis, as record numbers of people around the world have been forced to flee war, persecution, and instability, Secretary Blinken added. We thank the government of Bangladesh as a generous host of refugees and for their support of this important resettlement initiative.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.